Hello, everyone. I'm Leslie Cornwell, certified nurse midwife with Midwifery Business Consultation. I'm very grateful to have Wendy Pinter here. She's a certified professional midwife from Michigan, and she has an interesting story of her midwifery journey and starting a birth center in Michigan. There's currently not regulations. It's both of our home states, so I know it pretty well, and having had a birth center in this community, I'm very curious to see what she's learned from and maybe stuff I did a few years ago and how we can bounce ideas off. So Wendy, if you don't mind introducing yourself and telling a little bit about your midwifery journey.
Sure. I'm Wendy Pinter. I am a licensed midwife and I practice in Southfield, Michigan, which is right in the Metro Detroit area. And I'll tell you right now, just like south of the microphone here, I have my pit bull Hamilton, who makes an appearance in every video I do, and he's chewing on his bone. So if you're wondering what that is what that is. But anyways, I was a home birth midwife since 2007. That's when my practice started. And as I kind of transitioned through different phases of my life, you know, becoming a single mom, I joined the Navy Reserves. Those things actually made home birth midwifery, it really added to it a lot, but it also made it a difficult thing. So I was meeting with a business advisor, like somebody that helps you plan for different moves in your business or improving your business. And we would meet weekly to talk about my goals, which were to eventually open a birth center. So time kind of went on, like I was learning about things that I didn't know, because when we become midwives, we learn our crafts. We learn how to take the best care of our moms and babies, but we don't learn anything about running a business and having employees and signing a lease and having a relationship with a bank. So having an advisor really does help with that. So in 2017, as a home birth midwife, I had three births in three different counties, and I did not make the last one. You know, the dad had to catch his own baby, which fortunately he was a veteran and he did really great. But it was just kind of the thing where I just put my foot down, like, it's time. You know, all this planning, all this talking.
That's your location where everybody comes to you and you've got a couple rooms and know where you're going each night or wherever.
Yeah, midwives, I think, are the queen of managing their own adrenal fatigue. And I just am not into that anymore. Even... You know, my job with the military is nice. They send me to Hawaii once a year to work. I'm fine with that. I need that break, you know, from this. So also managing, sharing a practice with other people and making it accessible for you to have, at that time I had backups. I didn't have, you know, partners, but now we've gotten from it just being me and an assistant, or me and another midwife and an assistant. And now we have 12 employees with different jobs, and, you know, they all are needed and they all have like a very crucial part in this business, taking care of our people. So
that's very cool. How did you transition from becoming backup collaborating midwives to each other to more of either business partners or employees? Like, how did that relationship evolve, if you don't mind going that direction?
It's hard. You know, I think I had to kiss a lot of frogs, because home birth midwives, which before I opened my birth center, that's all there was here. You know, they're pretty set in their ways. They have a certain way of doing things, and every other business model they look at with some suspicion, you know, and like, what's in it for me, because they're not used to sharing their money amongst
business partnership. We're used to being sole proprietors where we all do our own thing. And yeah, I love the idea of either business partners or you have the employee relationship, but it's a very different dynamics, because we love to do our own thing.
Yeah, we sure do. So I ended up finding a lot more luck searching out of state, new grads, you know, people that were used to working in birth centers and understood that just because a client pays you X amount of money, you know, doesn't mean you split it 50-50 between the midwives. There's a building, there's supplies, there's malpractice insurance, there's liability insurance, there's
all that overhead that the business owner is responsible for that I think sometimes gets forgotten.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. And also, yeah, and that was always met with suspicion. Like whenever I would go to bring somebody on, they're like, okay, so we split it 50-50. And I'm like, I haven't gotten paid 50-50 since I started this. It's not how it works at all. Like even when you're by yourself, there's other costs. So that was really hard. But eventually, you know, I found a really good midwife, and she shares my call. Yeah, here he comes. She shares call with me, and she's been a really great midwife. But you know, you don't have to partner in the actual business in order for that to be successful, and she has no desire. So those are the things. She is very self-aware of like what I am responsible for, and I don't have any problem giving up my reins, but the people that I have working with me are very happy that I'm the one taking care of those things, and they should be. It is so hard.
Well, I think that's important for midwives to understand. Some are very good at being midwives and an employee midwife, and some are better at being a midwife business owner. And I actually did a recent blog post about that, comparing what kind of personality do you have, because you don't want to, well, maybe we should just start a business because I want to stay in my hometown, but maybe you don't have the personality. Maybe you should reach out to somebody that does, and then you work under them. So yeah, I definitely agree that it's not, I think too many midwives feel they have to start a business, even though it's not their calling and desire. You can find great practices like yours. You just have to know where to look.
That's exactly right. And I, you know, in my search for the perfect midwife, I've even had students that were such good midwives, but they were bosses. They were not the type of person that could work under me. And I had to like sadly let them go because I really loved them. But I'm like, you
won't be happy long-term with this dynamic. Yeah,
exactly. I already know this. You know this, like we are already there. So, I mean, it's a funny thing, but like you can kind of tell when you have to hire people. You know, there are people that are super happy just having you take care of those hard things. And they often recognize when that is the case, when they're like, wow, I would have had to do that. And I never want to do that.
Well, I think it's being able to have professional, constructive conversations. I think that's sometimes hard for midwives. We don't want to hurt each other's feelings. We're all about the, but it's a business. It is. We have to make tough decisions and be respectful in the process. And I think it's an art being an owner and having staff and to be able to say, you know, I really love you as a person, but I don't think we would work well together working side by side, you know? And so it is, it's an art. May I ask the direction, did you like look for clinical sites? Did you put an open position for a staff member? How did you find that great midwife to join your team?
You know, so far we've been approached by people, and I don't know that that's always the best. I am starting to learn, because that's the newest thing is hiring employees. And especially during the era of a pandemic, we went from really not needing that many people to really needing that many people. Like we need every person. And so I just recently, like right before the pandemic started, I had graduated from the Goldman Sachs 10,000 Businesses program. And I really recommend that to anybody who has been in business. They have certain requirements, and if you meet them, please do that. That is a great, great, great program. And they just continue. I mean, things have grown so much more intentionally since I finished that program. But one of the things I learned there is to be slow to hire and to be quick to fire. So you are going to take your time, like call the references. My gosh, don't bypass that. Call the references, because I mean, every time that I've hired somebody and it hasn't quite worked, I knew ahead of time that that was going to happen, but I always like to give people a chance. That's the midwife in me. Like, this is a new model. Maybe they'll work better here. No.
The personalities don't change abruptly. I mean, yeah, you can have life circumstances, a pandemic, something happens to your family, but if it's more of a work ethic and a bigger structure of consistency, you start seeing trends and yeah, for sure.
And for us, like having, the personalities matched, like our practice, we have extremely skilled midwives working, and it shows during birth. They never panic, even when it is time to panic. But that isn't the case. You know, we've all worked with people that like they're just not comfortable in their skin yet, and this isn't the appropriate environment to do that independently. We're very happy to. I mean, we understand like somebody coming right out of school, they need support. This is a great place for that, but not everybody is self-aware that they need support and it can be really hard.
And I think it's the other direction, the birth trauma, the professional trauma. If somebody's actively burnt out, they had a solo practice cross country and they want to join a team, it's going to take, it's that grieving, that remorse process and being able to be transparent with each other. Like, okay, I'm going to be more anxious at birth for a while. I'm going to be more anxiety driven. I'm working on that. But I mean, we have to, it's not just about being a new experienced midwife. You could have had something recently happen in your life, a baby pass away and you're like, okay, I want a team. I didn't make it to that birth, and recognizing that trauma and getting through it too on both sides and being honest and transparent of your vulnerabilities and what makes you more nervous and what you excel at.
And speaking of that, that is an attitude that comes through very often in an interview. You know, when I'm talking to midwives that I want to hire, you can tell how a trauma was treated in their previous life. And I think, especially in midwifery, I mean, I know I've experienced it, but it's not just here. I know it happens at the hospital too. We tend to eat our young when something bad happens instead of being supportive. And in our practice, the buck stops here. If I'm the midwife, if I'm the pilot in control, I'm the one that is flying that plane. Like I don't get to blame the passenger for something. You know, everything is on me. I don't get to blame the student. Like the student doesn't know what they're doing. That's why they're there. And there is a lot of passing the buck that goes on sometimes when there's trauma. So in our practice, that is an attitude where I really appreciate that during a difficult birth or an outcome that was less than optimal. The mixture of people that work out in my particular practice are people that understand their individual responsibility and don't try to pass that on to people that, you know, are going to suffer if they do. And we actually have a therapist, and we have since I started, on staff. And we have, you know, any type of outcome that is less than optimal since the beginning of time. But now I have somebody right in the building. Not only does she talk to my staff immediately, like we meet as a group with the therapist, but so does the family. The family that just had that birth. We make sure that we all process that together, because it is what it is. You know, you can't, I mean, if there's something you can change, it's probably something that everybody needs to acknowledge. And if it's something that couldn't be avoided, you know, that also needs to be acknowledged. Like we really try to keep things open and honest, because blame does not fix anything.
I honestly had no idea you had such an amazing service. It was just serendipitous that I brought up that in the conversation. I'm like, I'm taking notes. I'm like, oh my gosh, every business model I talk about now needs a therapist on site. Like you've got my brain going. Because it's true. I mean, as a staff, you lower your litigation. I bet you could get your malpractice cheaper by having that person and making them aware, because you're going to create that open communication for the staff and the families and a grieving process that's appropriate. And so, no, I think that's amazing what you've creatively thought of. Have you seen it in other places, or did it just make sense to you as part of additional services?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like my first year in practice was extremely traumatic. And I think a lot of midwives, their first year in practice is traumatic because you just, I don't know why, but it just seems to be a normal thing. And so from the beginning of time, you know, there was always like interpersonal difficulties, whether it be between the staff or just processing after births, those type of things. You know, the real reason why I did it is because of how I communicate. I'm a very direct person and people don't, that's not always like the best thing when you're working with people that are sensitive. And for me, I can just say what's bothering me at work and then have, you know, I'll forget about it. Once I go home, I've got other things going on. I'm not thinking about work. I leave it. And so I got the therapist actually to help me communicate effectively, because for me, I'm very Buddhist and I'll be like, whatever, if you don't want to work here, that's fine. You know, and I just won't, I don't think about it. But they just helped me. I did it so that I don't do that, so that I have a meaningful conversation without ego and with somebody who can say.
Well, I think that's phenomenal for professional development, just bridging that communication styles and acknowledging your strengths and weaknesses. I think as leaders, we don't realize when I'm giving people consulting services about a business plan, we spend it just as much on professional development as we do a business plan, because I could have the most amazing number crunching and thesis and market analysis, but if you don't have leadership quality, you don't acknowledge your strengths and weaknesses and be humble. I mean, there's very specific traits, and if you don't have them, you got to work on them. And so, no, I think it's great you're acknowledging that part from transitioning from a small, simple, private, self-employed business model to a business owner. You have to have a different level of skill set.
Yeah.
So Wendy, what would other things be like on the birth center side, like getting it going and started? I know you said you hit a breaking point, single mom, military, having births all over the place. What were other things that made you say, you know, there's a need for a birth center, or like what else made you push that direction to transition from home to birth center?
When I was having my daughter, she is almost 20 now, there were no independent birth centers, at least that I was aware of. You know, I think that they were probably there, but there wasn't anything that was
advertised and
accessible. Yeah. And so I definitely did not think I was going to be the one to do that. I was not in the birth community at all. I was just a mom. I worked at a motorcycle store, so I had no ties to this, but yeah, so I didn't think it was going to be me, but it did never go away. Like that thought that, you know, it was needed. And so I guess that's kind of what started it. I actually took my doula training while I was pregnant with my daughter, because I couldn't find a doula that was able to be on call either. It was so weird, but it was just, back then, there was really a demand for this type of service. There wasn't anything there. But did I think I was going to do it? No way.
No. Yes, there's somewhere. And I think it's so cool to say, okay, 20 years ago, doula services were hard to find. And now we've got lots and lots of them. And my vision is the big picture with starting midwifery business consultation. 20, 30 years from now, I want so many midwifery opportunities. I want so many private practices, strong foundations, minimal burnout. We've got a different direction, momentum. And so, yeah, I appreciate your time coming on with me today. Is there any advice you would give to people listening to this, thinking about starting a practice, thinking about going into midwifery? Any 2-minute tips at the end, I like to ask.
You know, I think my advice for people is to don't pigeonhole yourself that you're the only person that can provide that service. For us, you know, even just having the birth center, we have it steering towards an open model. We're even talking to large doctor practices that have midwives that work out of hospitals that are interested in getting involved with our service. And for me, that's that exit strategy. Like when I can provide this place or this model and share it with other people who haven't had access to a place like this to work, you know, not everybody's going to be interested, but you are not the only person that can hit a baby out. That's the thing I want midwives to know. Like, you're not the only one. So if you don't feel good, if you feel like you need to rest, find a way to let somebody younger or more provisioned do it. Like, you can still be the model without being the person that's doing it.
And I would stress, like, at our first consults in new OBs, I'd say, you don't want Leslie Cornwell care. You want midwifery care. So I would stress the team, I'd get the mindset, because I think it is hard when you have a culture and a community getting such an entrenched legacy of one person and their identity. We lose the focus of, it's not this person and their brand they've created for 30, 40 years. It's the midwifery model. And you can get that from wonderful midwives that, yeah. So I think I appreciate that bringing up and getting people to rebalance. Team, you help each other out. The families are going to benefit from it. If you've been up for 30 hours, you want somebody fresh and new. You don't want the same midwife. It's not safe. It's not that. So I think that's what we need to kind of get, that morphing mentality of, how do we work as a team? How do we support each other? How do we support these families? So thank you very much.
My pleasure. So, and at Wendy, the end of the day, these parents oftentimes will be like, do you see, this was your midwife at your birth, and I wasn't at their birth, but they do know that I was, like, really in spirit. And I still get to share in the thought that, like, you know, I did do that.
The midwifery essence was presented by you and your team. Maybe you did a couple prenatal visits, but you weren't at the birth. But to the woman, you were part of that team, and it's easier to explain to children.
It's so clear that they still feel that I'm there. So it's really interesting, unexpected, and I'm glad that I've lived long enough to see that that's possible.
Yeah, if you're comfortable, Wendy, I appreciate you getting on with me today. If people can email you, or a best way to contact you if they have questions about setting up more of a business structure versus just a solo practice, if you have a great resource they can direct to, I'd appreciate it.
All right. My email is wendy@9shortmonths.com, which is all words. And I think... it, you know, from what I can tell, your resource is a great one. You know, it is super smart. If you can, there are a lot of little pitfalls where you can spend money that you don't have to. And so if you talk to a birth center owner or a business consultant, listen to them. You know, they have no reason to steer you wrong. So
there's no biases. Their core mission is to help you. Yeah. So no, I mean, that's why I created 3 years ago this wonderful service, because there's resources, there's tools. Why do we all have to rework the wheel for 40 hours making accredited birth center policies when someone else has it? You just have to fill in for your local location. It just didn't make sense to me.
Yeah. So that is, I'm still working on all those things. So,
I'll be. Yeah, so maybe, yeah, I was going to say, make sure you've subscribed. I think get the emails and look at the resources. But our goal is just to work as a team. Nobody's going to be the expert. I'm very transparent. Like, I talk to birth center consultants all over the country, and I'm like, okay, if you want insurance accrediting, this is the gal you talk to, or this is the gal. I've worked really hard to figure out who the experts are across the country, because I want us to know our weaknesses and our strengths and who to get people to. I think it's about building the relationships and the connections and finding out who these people are doing what you want to do and are willing to share that knowledge. So thank you very much.
Exactly. Wendy, for your time. Well, thank you for all that you do.
Yeah. Well, you have a great rest of the day, and I'm sure we will talk soon.
All right. Thank you.